看来我们只能靠自己了。
地球错失了最后逃命机会。
这座宫殿不是庇护所。
我觉得彭院长还是霍南大人，你们女的都没。
Hi everyone, and welcome to Middle Earth, your source for insight into China cultural industry. Listen on to those who are making a living by creating and distributing art or content onto the world's second biggest cultural market. I'm your host, Aladin Faré, founder of China Compass Production. And apart from this podcast, if you need to find a location scouting for your next film in China or bring your YouTube channel to Chinese platform, you should reach out. On this show, we have often talked with directors, content producers, and artists, but today we would like to take a step back from those producing content and look more at the macroeconomic of cultural industry. Who sponsored the art in China and how and why do they do it? As most of you might be aware, especially if you listen to this show, cultural products are not actually an easy sell, and often without the support of a patron, it's really hard to be able to produce anything and make a living out of it. And it turns out it's the same in China. Of course, we can't really give a full comprehensive picture of a country with 1.4 billion inhabitants, but as usual, to throw some number about this topic, in 2019, China national government had a budget of 30 billion yuan, that's roughly 4 billion USD, on culture. And then some province sponsor the film industry. For example, they would build a film studio, like a Hongdian in Zhejiang, where most of China TV shows and film are being made. At the World of Chinese magazine, we wrote a piece about this, link in the podcast description. Also, they would support film festivals like the Pingyao Film Festival that got 10 million yuan of subsidies in the first 3 years. And then also you have like several big companies like Real Estate Wanda or Fuwa International Group who have created art museums and galleries all across the country. So today we have two experts on the show to talk about how the public and private sectors in China supports the art. First, with me here in Beijing in the studio, Chen Yilin. Hello.
Hello, my name is Yilin Chen. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I always, if I may, like for me, like we always say Zhang Yimou, we don't say Yimou Zhang.
Yeah, that's the way that, because I lived in Europe for a long time, so I'd like to introduce my name first and then my family name.
Okay, makes sense. Sorry. So, Yilin, what yeah. do you do? Who are you?
I worked in contemporary art industry, as I have experience in working in art galleries in Europe, museums in Beijing, and also now I am working in a real estate company called Wingland Group as art director. And we have an art gallery that I'm running on art space in Beijing. It's called Carte Blanche. We are passionate about art and we consider art as the most important value of the real estate company.
And also to be transparent with you, dear listener, also Yilin is also one of my colleagues, one of my clients even, let's put it this way, because we are creating right now a podcast called the Winland Art Podcast, where we go on and we interview like artists and gallery owner, and we're gonna soon like release one episode onto the feed of the Middle Earth podcast so that you guys can have a listen. On the other side of the country and online, Eli Rosenberg. Hello.
Hi, so my name is Eli Rosenberg. I've been in China on and off since 2006. We started a small company doing events production with my wife about 7 years ago. Slowly, we started working with larger clients like the Beijing district's governments on Beijing Design Week, with French embassy, the Indian embassy, and building projects in various cities across China. We moved to Yunnan province, which is in the south of China, about a year ago. We were hired as consultants by a real estate company.
Yeah, consultant regarding art and culture, just to be precise, right?
Yes, exactly.
All right. And also we'll hear the testimony of my friend Hussein, who helped local government onto creating culture and tourism. That would be like a brief testimony. Of course, we'll mainly talk about how and why public and private sectors are supporting arts and what are the kind of arts that they prefer to support. And also like what are like the pros and cons of having like so many money maybe going into the art scene. Once again, just to be make things clear, like we can only give a glimpse of what's going on that side of the world with our own limited knowledge, me and my guest. And so, of course, like if you want to know more about those topics, I can advise you, dear listeners, to tune in to episode 82 and episode 36 and episode 60 of the Middle Earth podcast, which talk about like a movie studio and Chinese museum and China National Park and scenic area. So all, I think all of that like are kind of small piece of a puzzle that can give us, you know, more insight into this country. All of that is, of course, on the podcast description with a link. And as usual, we'll finish the panel conversation with a quiz where one of our guests will win a prize. First, once again, to always kind of give of a backdrop to the audience, like I was wondering, what can you share regarding the support of private and local entities? How does it fit into those art form? I think, Ilin, you can start.
The fact is that if you want to have a project in China that can be proved, that means that you have to have a government support. That is very different from European country and I guess American cultural background, that all the cultural sectors are independent or somehow independent from the state-owned sector. So in China, for the film, for the music, I guess, and for the exhibitions, that you have to have a certain approval from the government, then you can have it. From my experience, all the projects that we did, you need, first of all, get the approval of the government, and then get the support or financial support or other support from the government.
Yeah, because to stop you right there, like it's not just the support morally and in terms of regulation, like also you can get money out of that. Like, I'm not going to give any names, but I applied for a tender for making some video for a museum in Beijing. But basically, from what I learned is that the local government, of course, give a green light, but then they are also going to like also invest into the museum.
Well, from my experience, like many cities have been trying to invest in those projects. Shenzhen is one of the one of the cities that invest most in contemporary art, then even build a region for contemporary art, and they have a huge convention center for contemporary art for welcoming the art fair in Shenzhen. And that's why, because of the art fair, they attracted a lot of galleries to open a new, we can say store, a new gallery there, more of local galleries. That's one of the government act that they can attract all the industries there. But I'm thinking more like problematic ways. So like some government that we deal with is more difficult, because in the other way, in the other side, the cities that you listed is very limited compared to the huge China plan background. So for the second tier cities or even third tier cities, you don't see art. People can never see art in those cities, which is very sad for me, because you need a lot of education in art. And the education is from the government. So it's a circle for me that we need to encourage the government to invest more in art education, and also in art exhibitions, and also in different projects. And often I see the government that they have late years, they have the conscience of like, I need to bring international contents. I need to bring museums, international museums. I need to bring this and that.
How does the local government support? Like they give tax break, they give money, they give price.
Well, first of all, they invest. They have local policies. For a real estate company, it means that we rent space, right? For a real estate company. So if we rent spaces for galleries, if a government can say we can 免租金, like we can have a policy that if you bring an international gallery in China, we can help you, we can support you for free rental for 3 years, for 5 years. Then the gallery itself can have a free space for 3 years.
Okay, so the government owns the building, and then
we own the building, like private sector own the building. Okay,
so the local government tell the private sector real estate company, if you find an international gallery to come there, no rent for you for 3 years.
More or less like that. They won't say that really directly.
Oh, okay.
They would say like, if you bring an international content, then we can help a private sector to have certain policies.
And so me quickly, I mean, what I can say to talk about the film industry, what's interesting, and then I will pass on the mic to you guys, is that actually like there is like still like a lot of help from local government. For example, in the town of Xiamen, like we were like, you know, doing some research. So for example, if your movie made 50 million at the box office and your company is registered in Xiamen, then the town will give you like a 3 million yuan as a bonus. That's like a public document that is available on the internet. And also like, once again, for the town of Xiamen, like if you open a company over there and then you make like a 2 million yuan of income, they would just give you like a tax break of 150,000 yuan. And if you build a film studio, they will give you like 10% back of the money of the investment. But to compare it like to the rest of the world, this is really, really, really low. Because in Georgia, like in the US, where so many Marvel movies have been shot, that's more like a 20% tax break. And then in Belgium, which is like basically the tax break haven of Europe, you can get like a up to a 40% tax break and subsidies back if you film a movie there. What's really interesting, and I feel completely missed the mark on creativity. So it's basically like winner takes all. You've already have a successful box office, and then the local government goes up to you and say, hey, here, more money for you after you had a good box office. And on the opposite, like they would never ever invest onto like the writing part. It's really interesting to see that in movies, like it's basically like if you are successful, then you will be rewarded with more money. But if you are nowhere to be successful, then no one's going to help you. So it's the only key metric that those public servant they can read about. Is this movie worth supporting? It's only like the box office, which I think unfortunately should not be working like this.
Maybe I can jump in.
Is supposed to be a conversation, so yeah, please jump in if you can.
The way I see it, and especially for local governments, but I think it's also true for higher levels of a government, is that most of the leaders in place have no understanding of culture. They have no education. But that's, I mean, let me just finish. They don't have any understanding of culture, but they're aware of that. And so when they make decisions on cultural projects, on whether to greenlight them, invest in them, they rely on brands. And that's why a lot of governments at the city level or the provincial level are keen to have international projects come in, because for them something that's international is a mark of quality. Whereas if they invest in something that is produced domestically, there's a higher risk for them. For the officials, it's a political risk, and for the clients that will support it. I mean, for my company, it's our clients, the real estate companies in particular. There's a financial risk involved. What I've seen is that in general, what happens is a real estate company has a project that they want to put together. Let's say a cultural project. It can be in music, it can be in arts. And the local government, well, first there is a discussion whether, you know, it's interesting to the local government. Usually they will push for the real estate company to create these kind of projects, because local officials have yearly objectives of number of cultural projects they put together for their population. So the real estate company will put together a project. It's greenlit by the government, and based on the size of the government, if it's if it's a small district of a small city, or it's the whole city that's involved, they will have different kind of budgets. And so if usually what happens is that the project happens, and after it's done, the government will have will pay back the real estate company or the client that has produced the event.
What's very interesting is that when I started researching this topic, like the way I was thinking about this is that you have on one hand local government, and on the other you have like real estate company. And from what you guys are saying is that basically I thought at the beginning the local government and the real estate company were kind of separate, but at the end they have like some kind of symbiosis relationship, where the government has like some kind of mandate, but then the people who do the hard work are actually like the real estate company. We have like a track record of, you know, doing things.
I think it all depends. Well, you have to understand, like, either a private company or government, they're all humans behind. And it all depends on the what kind of real estate it is. You know, in China, real estate is not a good word. Often you say, I'm from a real estate company and I do art. People will say, you sell art. Like, you sell the brand. Like, the art is not real art in the real estate company. You just you are profiting art to get a land. That's the image that you get in China, because a lot of real estate companies profits those policies to get the land, because they kind of sell an artsy image or cultural image to the government. And in the other way, like, government, if it is a real good real estate company like ours,
of course,
that can stay longer time, that can stay in time. That means that we knows that place, we know the city more than the government, and the government sometimes they change their team. You have to understand, like, 2-3 years they change the team and the policy can be changed because the policy are made by the government. And also from the different teams, they don't have the same understanding of the state policy, because local policy are made according to the understanding of the state policy.
I think a very big issue for us when we try to build long-term projects in China, to be able to guarantee that a project will work for more than 3 years is extremely difficult. I think the core of this is one, like, central tenet of, like, in the Communist Party, which is one of the bases set by Mao Zedong, that the party should revolutionize itself every 6 months. And I think that's, you know, it's still happening today with important leaders changing every 3 or 4 years. And when they come in, they will usually, you know, look at policies set in place by their predecessor and unbuild them, basically. So that makes things very tricky.
I agree. One of our main job is to convince and to educate the government, actually.
Okay. Moving on now, we're going to listen to a quick testimony, and I hope you guys would react to it. So the testimony is going to come from my friend Eusin. So we actually, fun fact, like, we met randomly, for those who know, in the good old days of when Temple Bar was open in Gulo in Beijing. And we kept in touch. And then later on, like, I learned that she was also working in those real estate company, and she was basically a consultant, like, to help local government to create, like, culture and tourism destination. And she has agreed to give us a short testimony regarding her job that she quit since then. Fun fact, because she doesn't speak English, and also because she, for privacy reasons, she did not want it to share, to record herself. Therefore, we've decided, because, you know, with all the AI tool available right now, I translated her testimony, and then we are using an AI voice to explain what she went through, which I think is still interesting. And also, yeah, that I would also admit, like, that really speeds up the whole process to have, like, a written testimony, and then you move on to just have it directly. So you have to trust my word on it, but Asin is a real person with real job experience, and I think what she's going to share is quite interesting.
Hello, my name is He Xin, and I am a former real estate professional. I worked in that industry for almost 3 years between 2019 to 2022. I worked on various projects such as residential communities, business offices, shops, hospital, and cultural tourism destination. Our main projects was cultural and tourism real estate, which, as the name suggests, is a real estate development project that combines culture and tourism. The usual scenario for us is that a local government could own a piece of land and would like to make it a destination that would attract people, that would generate income with tourism, people buying houses, and attract companies. However, the local government would not have the funds to build it, so they will look for a real estate company like us to partner with. If we think it has commercial value, then we would build it. If the real estate company considers the land worth investing in, then it will create a construction plan with the local politicians. It may be a cultural town, such as Wuzhen in Zhejiang Province or Anaya in Hebei Province. In addition, the local government might ask to enhance the local characteristics. For example, in a valley full of Chinese herbal medicine, the builder would need to incorporate elements of Chinese herbal medicine in the urban design of the destination. The same logic would apply in a region inhabited by ethnic minorities. The real estate company would need to incorporate their lifestyle, history, and culture into the new buildings. For us, there were several major difficulties in building such projects. Firstly, there were many uncertainties with the pandemic, the economical situation, or local government policies. Second, the construction cycle and the return on investment would take several years. Third, there is the inherent contradiction of having a cultural destination built by a private company, so it is really hard to create a genuine place that brings a nice experience for the visitors that will come.
Okay, so now that we've listened to our testimony, I was wondering if you guys could have a reaction to that.
I've been involved working with real estate companies in this kind of project. Yeah, they get a very strong impetus from the local government to do these cultural events or projects.
What do you mean project?
The government's mandate is to serve the people. As such, they have objectives that are set nationally to provincial levels and then from provincial level to sub-districts to create cultural events that will serve the people. They also get budgets allocated to these projects. So they have to do these projects so that their communities are exposed to culture. Of course, the definition of culture, the traits of the project they will promote are closely linked to political objectives. Especially nowadays that the Chinese economy is not doing very well after 3 years of pandemic and other factors, the local governments don't have budgets anymore. And that's why they rely very heavily on real estate companies, because real estate companies, unlike the tech giants, they actually are in direct contact with the population.
And then can you describe like a little bit more like the kind of event that you were doing?
Okay, so that really depends on budgets, basically. So music festivals have become very popular for real estate companies to increase visibility for their spaces. Music festivals are something that's very new in China, and real estate companies don't necessarily have a good understanding as of what it's meant to be. So you see a lot of different styles of what they call music festivals or what we call music events. We did a project earlier this year in a very small place. They commissioned us to do a music festival in a park. They were hoping to get thousands of people. But eventually, we only hundreds of people showed up. And so that wasn't that happens a lot in Yunnan, where you have music festivals, quote unquote, which have no audience. I mean, there's you have music festivals that are with bands that are purely commercial bands that have no original songs, for example.
It's just cover song.
Yeah. So one model that they like to follow is, I was talking earlier about how officials will rely on two things to make decisions on a project. One is brand, and the other is guanxi, so the personal networks. Because they know they don't have a good understanding of culture, they don't have the tools to judge whether a project is meaningful or not. So the brand part, they will either work with a famous music festival brand, which in China there's only one, and it's Strawberry. Or they will work with famous music bands. There's like three bands that are touring all over China all the time at music festivals because they feel that they will automatically attract an audience.
Who are they? Names.
So the biggest one is Miserable Faith. It's a metal band from the 90s and Tongyang in Chinese. Then you have, of course, Cui Jian, who's the grandfather of rock. And you have Xie Tianxiao, who's the father of rock and roll in China. The budget to invite these bands is huge. A band like Tongyang to have them play perform at a festival, it's about a million renminbi.
So $150,000.
And so what they'll do is, we'll bring in this band, and that way we'll be sure to have a lot of public, and then the rest of the bands, you know, just bring whoever. And who's in charge of doing this? It's companies like mine, doing event production, but a lot of them are not very interested in music itself. They're companies and they're commercial, you know, focused. So they're trying to make money. So they'll maximize the profits they can make from a festival, which will have between 3 and 5 million RMB budget. If it's a bigger one, if it's a smaller one, it might be, you know, 500,000 RMB. So for the bigger ones, what they'll do is they'll invite two or three of those bands I just mentioned, and then they will invite bands that are, you know, usually you'll see them at bars singing covers, and they're paid very, very low amounts.
What you're saying is that sponsored local government concerts are going to be bad most of the time.
You have to think about what is the purpose of a government bringing a festival. Their focus is not about the quality of the festival or any projects. Their focus is to bring the public to see what they have done. And for a private sector, it's all about quality.
I'll just give like some quick counter examples. Strawberry.
There's this big brand of festivals, and they go all over China, and they do basically the
same lineup everywhere, and the local government pays the bill, or a real estate company pays the bill. The ticket price is very high, so it's about 800 kwai for 2 days. So it's very expensive, and the lineup is pretty much unchanged all over the country for the past 2 years. And just a week before, I think, there was a music festival that was organized by a beer company, Snow Beer, one of the big Chinese beer companies.
It's like basically China Heineken.
Yeah, and the really interesting part is that both events were paid for by the same company. Suihua paid Strawberry to do their festival, and they organized their own a week before, 2 weeks before, which I don't know how that happened, but basically it happened. And the Suihua Festival, the entrance was 88 RMB, and it included one beer. And the lineup was great. I mean, they didn't have super, super famous bands like the ones I mentioned, but they had some solid bands. It was well curated. And the event itself was well organized as well, reading from the comments online. And the next week they had Strawberry, which is this, you know, very famous brand now. And people online were insulting them because they paid an extravagant amount of money to get into the festival. It was badly organized because of logistics. It was in a bad area. It was difficult to get to. And the lineup was the same they've been offering for the past 2 years. And so the public, you know, they're aware. And that's why I think it's moving in a good direction, is that people have more and more comparison points to make, and so I think it's the industry is improving, and it's gonna get better and better.
The beer brand that organized their own festival, they do that, of course, it's a pure marketing stunt, but then they do it like in the best quality as possible. It's basically content marketing.
Oh yeah, I mean the beer company, they have an objective is to sell beer. It's publicity for them, but I don't know how they found the team that organized it for them. But they were obviously, you know, a professional team that had music at heart. And I think that for the people that pay, because that's the most important, you know, the people that pay the bill at the end, which is this beer company, and I'm sure for Strawberry, the local government had a hand, you know, also subsidized it. You know, they will look at the result and they'll see, okay, you know, people were not happy with this one and they were happy with this one. And the market will work. It will change the way things are done.
We saw that during the music industry, basically like the private and public sector work a lot together. But then I'm wondering, Ilin, can you tell us also about why private companies would invest into art in China? And I think during our pre-interview, like you gave me like some really different answer in terms of how people invest in art in China and abroad, and there is like a massive difference.
For the private sector, it is more personal case. In Shanghai, in Beijing, all over China, you see a lot of private museums are built by private collectors. They began as they might be also like a real estate owner. They can be very successful in other areas. For example, Red Brick Museum in Beijing is owned by actually a real estate owner. He started collecting, and then he said, okay, I need a museum I need a space to exhibit my artworks. And also, like in Hangzhou, you have Li Lin as the president of Jiangnan Buyi, the clothing brand. She also has a real estate project, but it's not the real estate project that she has museums, she has art galleries and also art residency in it.
Okay, but all those private museums, is it like a vanity project? Or is it for tax break incentive? Or do they make money out of it?
Well, I think museums, all in all over the world, the museums are not making money. So in China, the differences of museums in Europe and museums in China is that in Europe, you have private museums from families, from groups. You have public museums that you can have a tax reduction. But in China, you will never have a tax reduction by building a museum, by collecting. So that's by pure passion, by pure interest in contemporary art.
I remember going to the Red Brick Museum. I thought the ticket price was pretty high, like more than 100 kuai, which is like five times the usual ticket price of
get the state help. You don't have a tax reduction. You don't have the help from the support from anyone. Part. And you have to know, like, have an international exhibition in China. The transport, the insurance, the installation, the borrow from the museum are extremely high. And so in order to balance all those expenses, you have to set up a quite high ticket price. But even though you don't have to, as I said, like the public is not interested in contemporary art. So even though you set up a really high ticket price, compared to the numbers of the visitors, you cannot have an actual return of the exhibition.
I think, you know, just going back to what you were saying, and I think is very true, is, you know, there are subsidies. Like, the government has money to support art in China. And it's possible to create really interesting projects. I mean, we have done so in the past. From what I hear, Yelling has been doing great projects as well. It's possible to do. There are some factors that need to be accounted for, is what you were mentioning before, is if you have a brand, if you have a project that has been successful, then they will buy into it and you will be able to have access to these subsidies. The other factor, which I mentioned before, is personal network. If you have relationships in place with the people that have the power to give away these subsidies, then you can make the projects happen, and you can have some really exciting projects happen in China.
And now, just the last classic question regarding how do you see yourself in 5 years? But joke aside, like, the fact that now China economy is definitely getting slower and that we might never see again like a double-digit GDP, where do you see the future going in terms of how local government and rich company, like, how do you think they're going to keep pushing on arts or things like that? Because to be honest, like, recently I was talking to a friend of mine who works in a public TV, and he was telling me that, they have like less budget now to go out on shoot and do documentaries. So I think the slowing economy is definitely like hitting at least everyone.
I see there's a lot of improvement in the music industry because of the competition. Now we're starting to see more interesting events. And I think that since there is less money to go around, I want to be optimistic and think that the budget is going to be allocated better because there is less of it. I'm not sure if that is going to be the case. And I think it will depend a lot on also where you are in China. Some like smaller provincial levels will probably have less interesting projects. But places where it's already quite advanced, like Beijing, Shenzhen, Shanghai, Xiamen, these places, I think we'll see more and more interesting projects. And so people that are actually competent and professional and passionate will have good opportunities.
I would say in next 5 years, and Chinese market, as I said, it will be more concentrated in Chinese.
In terms of contemporary art
compared to international market. So it depends on what kind of project we're doing. I think, the fact is that we have less budget from the government, but in China, it's always the government has the most budget. So it depends on what project you're doing. And I have the confidence that like three of us were doing. The reason that we're here is that we're also doing good quality things. So good quality projects will be more and more capped in China and brought into China.
As long as we have a Guanxi, I guess, also that's important. Well, thank you guys. And now we're going to move on with the last part of the show, my favorite, the quiz, where we're going to see who is the most knowledgeable among our guests on today's topic. The rules of the quiz are simple. I'm going to ask you a few questions. If you know the answer, you first buzz in with your name. Each character should give you a point, and the person with the most point wins the quiz, obviously. And the winner of the quiz will receive the World of Chinese latest issue. I have a physical copy right there here with me. Question one. This year, one Chinese movie has been selected at the Cannes Festival 2023. For those who will listen to us in a couple of years down the line, it has been selected though only in the non-competition segment. Can you tell me which Chinese province has given this movie public support?
I should ask the actor. I was talking to her on WeChat yesterday. Okay, Eileen, did you have an idea?
Absolutely no idea.
Okay.
I chose to be.
Okay, I'll give it a guess then. I mean, she's based in Beijing, but I'm pretty sure it's not Beijing that supported it. Maybe Fujian province?
No, it's not Fujian province.
Okay. Eileen, I'd say Guizhou.
Neither. Okay, I'm going to give you a tip. They have a lot of money over there.
Yilin, Zhejiang.
Yes, indeed, it is Zhejiang. Actually, it's from Hangzhou Yuhang District Literature and Art Fund.
But I blame my problem in geography. I thought that Hangzhou was in Fujian, but okay.
Are you kidding me, man?
No, I suck at geography.
Yeah, I can see that. Okay. Second question. Can you tell me the name of the bank that has opened an art museum?
Yilin.
Yes.
Chinese bank?
Yeah, Chinese bank.
Wow. I was not aware of that.
Minsheng Yinhang.
Yes, indeed. It is the Minsheng Yinhang. And then they opened like the Minsheng Xiandai Meishuguan in Shanghai.
Oh.
Minsheng is a bank in Shanghai, right?
I have no idea. I think it's in Shanghai.
Okay.
But they have museums in Beijing near Qijiuba. And they have another museum in Shanghai.
All right. I think we know who's going to win the quiz, but maybe we'll have a runner-up. Third question, hopefully that's more in your area, Ellie. Let's play Guess the Number. The town of Chengdu hopes that by 2025, the local music industry and affiliated industry will reach a certain volume in terms of, you know, monetary volume. Can you tell me the estimate of how much they think to achieve by 2025? And we're talking about billions of yuan.
I suck at numbers. Billions of yuan? 3 billion?
Chengdu is the hottest city in terms of music scene in China today, and I'd say the objective is 50 billion.
Well, you're still far from it because it is actually 100 billion.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
100?
I'm not surprised.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought they were kind of a little bit over their head with this number. Like, that seems way too much.
But
you think that's like a potential number that could be rich?
Potentially. I mean, maybe not quite 100 billion by 25, but... Yeah.
Well, anyway, but Eileen is still the winner of the show. So
well done.
Congratulations.
Thank
Here is
you.
Your prize. Our latest issue, which is actually about like how to design cities better for kids. So I think for someone who works in a real estate company.
It's very nicely made magazine. Yeah, the quality of the paper and the images are good.
I didn't know you guys had a printed version. I thought it was fully digital. That's cool.
So now is the good time, dear listeners, to remind you that the Middle Earth podcast is part of TWC, the World of Chinese Podcast Network. So if you want to know more behind the headlines, go to theworldofchinese.com and order your latest copy, digital or printed. So glad to have you until the end, dear listener. And if you like the show, of course, apart from supporting the World of Chinese magazine, you can support us by recommending us to your friends, because we will stay for free on the internet. Also, if you are impressed by this show guest and need to find an interview for your next documentary in China, you're a researcher, bring your YouTube channel to a Chinese platform, or on the opposite, like if you want us to translate a movie, I mean, we've done a few Chinese translation movie, you can give us a call. Today's episode was produced and edited by me, Aladdin Faré.
Music by Sean Calvo.
And distributed by the World of Chinese Podcast Network. Hope to see you next time. Bye-bye.
Yeah, so I thought what Yilin was saying is super interesting.
Yeah, because I always bring the best guest on that show. Okay, please move on. Looks like our listener are still doing their dishes.
Yeah, all very committed to their workout.
Yeah, for sure.
So since you're still here, if you want to learn more about Chinese society, culture, history, and language, you should go to theworldofchinese.com or find us on WeChat, and you'll find an amazing array of award-winning, in-depth, original reporting on China and amazing videos and podcasts too.
All right. Well, until the next issue then.